it's Gail. We did an interview with Barry Marr for his book, The Great Dick and the Dysfunctional Demon, which was awesome. He let us in on some insight about how the book came to be, a little bit of insight on the characters, and we hope that you enjoy the interview, and we hope that you will read the book because it was great.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you, ladies?
We're good. We're good. We're very excited to have you on.
Well, I'll try to be exciting, but I don't guarantee that.
I don't know. I read your book. I feel like you're either really fun or I'm like, I don't know how you could not be fun, actually.
Really fun, or what was the remainder of that sentence going to be? When
the alternative would be really boring, but I feel like that's just not possible. I'm like, I read the book. That's what I wanted to ask you first and foremost.
Should we?
Yeah, let's do an introduction.
Sorry.
First.
Yeah, introduce yourself. Tell us about you because
we Googled you, but I'd rather hear it from your mouth.
Yeah, we want to hear who you are and what you've done. And
Let's see what I have to say. I'm my checkered past by Barry Marr. Huh? I'm a product of 4 years at the University of Notre Dame. It took me 5 years. An hour and a half at the graduate journalism program at UC Berkeley, and 5 totally befuddled weeks at the Whopper College of the Burger King Corporation.
Nice.
Nice. I didn't think so. Neither did they, actually.
You're like, get him out of here.
Yeah, that was it. I was like the world's worst Burger King manager. In my misspent youth, I committed journalism. Of sorts. My stuff was in maybe 100 different publications. And in order to eat, I had just about that many different jobs. So I've done a whole lot of different anything, different kinds of everything, rather. At one point, I started telling my stories to audiences. And more importantly, then I started telling my stories to audiences and charging. And that seemed to work out a whole lot better. And since then, I've been doing a whole lot better. And I spent like 25 years as a speaker and a writer, mostly nonfiction books in those days. And then recently, I wrote The Great Dick and the Dysfunctional Demon, and people seem to like it.
I loved it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I'll carry you around with me so I can have you say that whenever I go someplace. Yeah.
It was great. That's what I wanted to ask you. I wanted to preface this. I don't think you're going to be offended. You don't seem like you're going to be offended, but this,
you never know.
This could offend the average mind.
Well, I'll give you that. I'm not the average mind.
Yeah, we got that.
Were you on like some crazy acid trip or something happened when you came up with a concept for this book?
Oh, you don't know this? You don't know the backstory behind the book? Ah, that's really interesting. Usually when we talk to people about a podcast, we tell them the backstory. I was speaking at an Asian cruise, and at one point I wanted to see how much time I had left in the session, and I couldn't figure out what the hands of the clock meant, which was kind of weird. I'd been having trouble the whole cruise figuring out foreign currency, which wasn't like me. Then in Vietnam, a woman wanted $7 US for a baseball cap. I gave her 200s and a 10. It's a nice baseball cap. It wasn't a $210 nice baseball cap. Got back home, talked to my doctor. First thing he did was had me draw a clock face 10 minutes to 3. Second thing he did was had me, it took away my driver's license is what he did second. Then he put me in an ambulance and had me do an immediate MRI. Turns out I had a brain tumor the size of a basketball.
Oh,
or maybe they said baseball. I wasn't tracking real well at that point, but I had a really big brain tumor at that time.
Wow.
And yeah, so they cut open the side of my head. You can still feel, you can't feel it over the Zoom meeting, but yeah, I still got these scars on the side of my head and a metal plate in there. And they took out the tumor, and maybe I had a seizure during the surgery. They weren't sure about that. But I woke up, I had Lady Gaga singing in my head, same song over and over again, just like she was in the room. And I had a vivid, fully formed, horrific story, like the memory of something I just watched. Complete with open crypts, bizarre spells, sudden death, and the Ralph Lauren version of the Manson family. And that became The Great Dick and the Dysfunctional Demon. So that's that. No, I wasn't on an acid trip. I was on a...
You were on a brain tumor.
A chainsaw trip, I guess, at the time, having my head cut open. Yeah.
Right. Well, thank goodness you're okay.
Yeah.
Let's hope so.
At least a great story came of it then, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. I didn't want to tell people at first because it sounds so weird. But yeah, it was probably the strangest gift I've ever received. And how could I not share it with people, right?
Right. Is it your first book?
This is my sixth book, actually. It's probably my first real novel. Most of the books I wrote were nonfiction to promote my speaking business. And writing fiction is a whole different ballgame. So in a sense, it's my first novel. My first novel that anybody paid any attention to, anyway.
When you're writing, this is a stupid question now. Never mind. I was going to say, do the characters just develop as you're going? But you said that you had this dream or vision or experience. You had to have built on that, yeah?
Yes. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know if it was a dream or it was like I actually watched it happening. Mm-hmm. Which was weird. But even if you saw something happening, to turn that into a novel, it's a big, huge difference from just seeing an event and experiencing it that way and then turning it into a story. We've got to get inside the characters. You've got to develop the characters. Why are they doing what they're doing? It's just a whole different thing. So it took me a couple of years to actually get the book written and develop the characters. And the characters did change from what I thought they would be, and what I thought they would be when I was first watching them. They sort of came to life on their own, and sometimes acted in ways I didn't expect them to act.
Oh, I love that. Because I wondered that too. I was like, do you know I hate Victoria? Were we supposed to hate her from the beginning? I mean, at first I'm like, we're reading the book, you know, and I'm like, I hate this woman. And it's before I know all of the things that I know now. But I'm like, she's like some 1950s, woe is me, take care of me. I'm so pathetic. I need just a man, but I'm also going to use, abuse, step all over you and be a total bitch in the process. You know, I'm like, I hate
you. Didn't care for Victoria, I think.
No, I didn't like her at all.
Right. Was she inspired by someone, you know?
Well, I don't know. I mean, like the way the story came to me, it was really hard to say what inspired it. I don't think so. I don't think I've known people that had tendencies in that direction, as we all have.
Mm-hmm, right.
I think she's a believable character.
Oh, without a doubt.
Right, exactly. But I think that's true about anybody, any character you write. You've known people like that that had those tendencies, but not people exactly like that usually. Mm-hmm. For example, the character calls himself Steve Wotowski. First time I showed that to my agent, he says, "Is that you? Did you write this about you?" I said, "No, none of that stuff ever happened to me." You
know? I kind of wondered that myself.
Yeah, well, that's people assume that. Now, that said, there are things from my life which I used to build the character, to flesh the character out in a way that I didn't know about, and things that I didn't know about him when I first watched that story, mm-hmm. when it first played across my mind, however you want to express what happened to it. So there are things about, he worked for a tobacco company. I actually worked for a tobacco company at one point and basically ripped them off as much as I possibly could because it was a tobacco company.
Yeah, right. But, yeah.
They're demons all on their own.
Yeah, they are.
Yes, that's their own kind of demon.
Yeah.
So Steve has his issues, and that's one of his issues, is he started out in an area before the story really begins. He was a very idealistic guy. He was a 60s kind of person. He was a hero in the 60s in his own way. Then he lost those beliefs. He lost the belief in himself and ended up working for a cigarette company. Jeez. You know?
Yeah.
And that's just the beginning. Things go way downhill from there, downhill.
Well, and he's also kind of not so likable at the beginning either. Because I mean, not that I ever felt about him like I felt about Victoria, but he, you know, he's just constantly disrespecting Maria and being rude to other people. And what can I get out of this relationship with Victoria? What's in it for me?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And so there was that part too.
So he's fumbling around because he's a guy who doesn't have any roots anymore. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a belief. He's lost his belief system and he's thrown into this supernatural mess, mm-hmm. and he's not doing well.
No,
he's not doing well. I think one of the best comments I heard about the book was somebody said something. She said, "I don't think I've ever met a character that I dislike so much and rooted for so strongly," which I think is how you should feel about Steve.
Absolutely. I can 100% agree with that statement.
I mean, I thought that was my intention, you know, somebody you would dislike, especially at the beginning, mm-hmm. and then come to root for, come mm-hmm. to realize that, you know, we've all got issues. This guy may just have a few more than most of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's the beauty of good storytelling like you did, is that you have an evolution of a character, right? Someone that you start hating and then you're like, oh, wow, I hate you a little bit less by the end of the book. Maybe I actually like you.
Hopefully you hate him a little bit less by the end of the book. Yeah. And he does ultimately, you know, without revealing anything, he goes through some changes, let's just put it that way, as all the characters do. I think every character in the book goes through some changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's life too, you know, especially when you're confronted by this supernatural mess that they find themselves in. You know, you had open crypts, dark spells, sudden death, and the Ralph Lauren version of the Manson family. You know, it's a lot going on.
A lot. And I love the blend of comedy with horror, because I laughed out loud in so many places. And then I'd be like calling Daphne or texting her and be like, oh my God, did you get to the part where, and I just kind of vaguely allude to it. And she's like, no, I'm not there yet. And then she'd be like, oh yeah, I just got there. I see what you're saying. That was hilarious. And, you know, and the 1982's references, and I was a kid, but I'm like, oh, I remember that. So
Good.
It was very, very well written in the visual aspect of it, that like you could see it playing out. And that to me is always a good book, because a lot of times you read a book and you just can't see it in your mind while you're reading it, you know?
Right. Well, that's really important for me, is that I can see it while it's happening. And of course, having had the experience of seeing it in under surgery or whenever, that probably helped a bit. But I always work on really visualizing the scene. You know, where are these people? How are they interacting with each other? Where are the characters physically? And how's that affecting them? You know, all the different things that you see that you don't necessarily experience, plus all the things that are going on in their heads. You know, it took me a long time to write the book, probably 7 or 8 drafts.
Well, wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see where, you know, why it would take you so long, and how, like I said, it's excellent visual. It's excellent blend of horror and comedy and drama, and just there's a lot happening. It was very page turning.
Well, thank you. It was meant to be. And that's the work of doing it draft after draft after draft, honing each scene, trying to get the most you possibly can out of every scene. Mm-hmm. And that's where the humor comes from, doing that. The humor hopefully comes from the scene itself. It's not imposed like, well, here's a joke I know, so let me find a way to stick this in here. It actually develops as it does in real life from what's going on with the characters.
Yeah, one, it's a very cynical humor, a lot of it.
Yes, it is. I don't know if that says anything about the author or not, but yes.
I was like, there was a lot where I was like, I don't know. I don't want to give anything away, you know?
Right.
Yes, but
we've sent the Amazon link to several people that I posted an Instagram story on our Instagram one day and said, starting a book club, something exciting's coming. Who wants the link? So hopefully people have purchased it and will listen along.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Are you working on anything else?
Yeah, I am. I'm working on 2 other books. I'm working on a sequel to this one, which is strange because when I wrote it, I thought it was going to be a one-off book because of the nature of the story. But the characters are so interesting to me, not necessarily always in a good way, that I'm going to do a sequel to the thing. And I'm working on another ghost story, another supernatural thriller, which is a ghost story.
Oh, good.
Which hopefully the characters will be more likable at the beginning. Although the guy who goes through this story has got some issues as well.
Yeah.
Don't we all?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that makes the characters, like, if they're just these perfect little Pollyannas, it's like, this, I don't want to read this. I like the diversity of it and the ups and downs of it. And yeah, the character development was great.
Oh,
but
thank
I did
you.
Pretty much hate Victoria from the beginning. I mean, not in the very beginning, because in the very beginning, when she enters, she's like the victim and you feel bad for her. Mm-hmm. But it becomes pretty clear pretty quickly that she's just a bitch. Sorry.
Well, no. Victoria, as we've been saying, has some issues, to put it very, very mildly.
Yeah. Yep. That's very mild. Very mild. We did have some questions for you, but we kind of figured it would just go.
Okay. I have a kind of crazy question, which might be proprietary, which I don't know if you can reveal, but have you talked to Hollywood? Are there any conversations of, I was thinking, because I love Mike Flanagan, the director, and he's made some that are
I mean, very along the lines of what your book is, right? And he adapts books into film or TV shows. And some of his shows have been on the more comical side as well. Like that, you know, exactly where yours are, that it's like it meets the line between, oh my God, I'm going to cry. I'm so freaked out. This is gory and disgusting. And I'm also laughing my ass off right now. So has there been any conversations that you can reveal?
Well, I can reveal the conversations because there's been a lot of conversations with a lot of people that aren't making any movies. A lot of people have said to me, you know, this should be a movie. In fact, mm-hmm. a huge number of people have said to me, this should be a movie. No one with the power to make it a movie has said that to me yet. I'm hoping at some point they do.
Oh, yeah. I hope.
Because I think it'd be a great movie.
It would be a great movie. And they're just remaking all these movies that we've already seen. So how about do something different?
Yeah. Well, write Michael Flanagan a letter. Tell him, here's a book. You've really got to see it.
Yeah. Daphne will write that.
I love him. I mean, I think he's brilliant in all the adaptations that he's done.
You're right. Yeah.
And I was like, man, this would be a great series because it would be, you know, that you could flesh the characters out enough and see their development. Whereas in a movie, sorry, I'm such a talker with my hands. In movies, you know, you don't always get that character development throughout it. That would be great as told in like a Netflix series, right? Like he does. I think he mainly works with Netflix. So. Yeah. I just kept thinking, I was like, Mike Flanagan needs this in his hands.
Yeah. And it
was also from your lips to Mike's ears. Yes.
Yes. Write it.
Yeah, he'd be perfect for it, actually.
Yeah, he would.
Yeah. It was also super smart the way it was written. So it wasn't.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I wonder where I got that from.
Could it be the education? I don't know.
I don't know.
Because I don't know. There are parts where I'm like, this might be too smart for me. And then I was like, nah, never mind. This is really funny.
It's not.
It's really not. Scary. Really.
It's not too smart for anybody.
There were parts, but
some of the philosophical stuff went over my head a little bit. Yeah, but
me too.
That's only because I have a challenge with philosophy. And it's mainly because of a professor I had in undergrad that really just, we got into a fight about the song, What If God Was One of Us? And I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm never going to look at philosophy the same.
Well, I think the philosophy in a way is like the humor. It's stuff that grows naturally out of the story. Mm-hmm. I didn't at any point say, I'm going to stick some philosophy in here. So what you probably think it meant is exactly what it meant.
Yeah.
Or is exactly what I wanted it to mean. You know, mm-hmm. because I didn't throw in a lot of, you know, okay, Plato said, you know, and this is Plato's cave, or Aristotle said, you know.
Yeah.
No, anything that's philosophical is just an outgrowth of the story, you know, like it should be. That's what philosophy should be, like outgrowth of life. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, you did a great job of it. I just have an internal conflict with philosophy. That's why.
So do I.
I think most people do.
I was gonna say, I think that's the point, right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Steve's character is so, like you said in the beginning, he's not likable because he's lost. But when you're getting his story as the book is playing out and you can see that he's like this, I don't want to say radical, but he was very motivated by people and helping people. And I mean, obviously there were things about him that weren't, but you know what I mean? Like the idea behind him is he's kind of this hippie type that's anti-war and I'm going to help people get out of the draft. And there was, you know, and then he goes south on that.
So he lost that. And then he had nothing. And that was it. And he was stumbling around and he stumbles into this bizarre supernatural situation. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have a framework to write himself. You know, we all have the things we believe in. When you don't have those things and you encounter adversity or demons, you're in a world of hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, I don't know. My mind spun.
So do you have any paranormal experiences that you brought into the book?
Yeah, you know, I have had a couple of experiences which I've never been able to explain. I had a woman that I was very close to for quite a while, and we got separated. And at one point, I was in bed and I was waking up, and I felt like she was there with me, like I was holding her, and which was really weird. I mean, it was one of those wake up experiences, and so much so that I really believed she was there. And then she wasn't there, and bizarrely, I found out that at virtually that exact same time, 3,000 miles away, she'd been in an auto accident and been knocked unconscious. And what that may mean or may not mean, I have no idea. But it was literally real to me. Mm-hmm. And the story of this book, in a way, is supernatural, the way the book came to me. I mean, just, literally like something that I just watched.
Yeah.
So as for an explanation to either one of those two things, I don't have it. Tend to think they're both a function of something in my brain. Certainly the brain tumor thing, God knows, people start digging around in your brain, anything can happen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was the brain tumor cancerous or was it just
But it's in remission now, fortunately. Oh,
yeah. That was my next question.
Yeah, no, it's I regained my ability to think clearly as I ever could anyway, to work, to write. I can tell time like a champ if you want to test me.
Awesome.
And I got my ability back to write. Also, I think it made me a better writer, strangely enough, because I think it increased my sense of focus and my sense of empathy. I may be a bit wiser that way. So in some ways it helped. In terms of some ways it didn't help. In terms of if you ask me what year something happened, forget it. I have no idea. So that kind of thing. And I'm not as good with faces as I used to be. So I sometimes walk by my neighbors without acknowledging them because I don't recognize them. Aside from that, there are no major problems.
Well, that's good. And
those are pretty minor, really. Except for the neighbor who gets pissed off because I didn't acknowledge.
Right. Exactly. I like that you use the word empathy, because I think also Steve becomes an empathetic character.
I hope so. I mean, that's kind of what he's struggling towards. Mm-hmm. And he isn't at the beginning. And he's telling the story from a distance. And he starts out by saying, I admit I was an asshole. Mm-hmm. And he pretty much proves that he was right after admitting that.
Yeah. Right. It's literally like one of the first lines in the book.
Yeah.
I'm an asshole. Yeah. Okay. Tell us all about you now. You did a great job of fleshing out the word, whatever word I'm looking for right there. See, I'm not great with words. I probably couldn't be a writer.
No, you're a podcaster. You're pretty darn good with words, actually.
Oh, thanks. I don't know if you've listened to any of our stuff, but I kind of struggle with things from time to time or every time, whatever.
I'm a professional speaker. I was for many, many years. And I sometimes struggle with words too. But the other thing is, as a professional speaker, when I was very, very fluent, sometimes I would stick in flubs because it made it more interesting and it got people's attention. Just little hesitations. Now they go in there naturally. I don't have to worry about sticking them in there. But when I was more fluent, I would occasionally just stick in like that. And it kept people's attention better. Very weird. I don't know why.
No, I get that. It distracts them. So it brings them back to the moment.
I guess. So, I wouldn't worry about a couple of those things once in a while. We all do it.
Right. Yeah. I'm just trying to grab your attention.
That's right. We did that deliberately. That mistake.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you've listened to us, but whenever we have a case that's foreign, we're like, we can't speak English half the time. So we're not going to be able to say these words.
Right. That's what we just did one on the Black Dahlia. And I apparently messed up a word the entire time. That I said several times, and she never said a word to me that I was messing up the word the entire time until she's editing it. And she's like, by the way, I'm like, cool. Now I just sound like an idiot. Once would have been fine. Now I just sound stupid.
It's okay. It's part of the charm.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Part of the charm. There you go.
Yep. We've definitely been called stupid more than once. That's how you know you've made it, when people hate you.
If nobody dislikes you, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
So true.
Exactly. Well, I'm excited for the next book.
Yeah.
Do you have a release date?
It's a ways away at this point.
Yeah.
You don't have a release date on the horizon yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't finished it yet because one of the problems of working with two books at the same time. I have a weekly column that I do. Let me plug my column, the Slightly Off-Kilter column, which is done through the Creators Syndicate.
Available online?
People can sign up for the Substack of the best of the Creators Syndicate, but otherwise they have to get it through their newspaper or some websites that pick up on it.
Well, email us the link and we'll in the Substack, and we'll put it in the description for this episode.
Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate that.
We'd love to do that. Yeah. Well, we all help each other, right?
I feel like that's how we all get here.
Yeah. And when I'm reading the book too, until you get to the very end, you don't think there's going to be another book until you get to the very end. And then you're like, okay.
Yeah. Well, by that point, when I was getting to the very end, at least by the sixth or seventh time, you know, with all the drafts, I just didn't want to let these people go.
At the end, I like Steve. At the end, I like Maria. I mean, I like Maria from the beginning, but you kind of feel sorry for her. And then she kind of becomes a stronger character. And then she's you're not feeling sorry for her anymore. So
she comes into her own, which I think she probably already had that potential and just basically said, okay, I'm not putting up with any more of this.
Yeah, exactly. Like she seems strong, but then she has those moments of where she seems weak, but it's because of what the other people are saying and doing where she's not like, just fuck you. Like she takes it personally and gets into herself. But then towards the end, you know, you can see that she's more, you know, fuck you. I am me, you know?
Yeah. She was one of my favorite characters in the book. She was certainly the most likable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. She's definitely the most likable. She's definitely the most that you're rooting for, I would say, from start to finish.
Yeah.
Right. At least I was rooting for her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You just want to smack Steve. Dude, what are you doing?
A lot of people want to smack Steve.
Well, he was very lustful.
Yeah.
Oh, he was that. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I like when they were digging. I mean, obviously I don't want to give anything away, but when they were digging in the graveyard and Humbert says to him, well, it's not like you'd be doing something for somebody who's not paying you and you'd be working so hard and just to get laid. And it was just kind of a blanket statement, but obviously he's talking to Steve right now. Right. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. I love that. There were a lot of those, the saggy ball sack part. I had to laugh about that. And that'd be as much of a pickup line as you'd think it'd be, or that work as well. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Actually, that wasn't in the original story. That is something that I did take from life from somebody that I knew, who I no longer knew. So I didn't mind putting it in there.
I'm like reading that. I'm like, I used it as a pickup line and it worked about as well as you'd expect it to. It's like, right. I'll bet.
This guy actually did that. So.
Not very enticing.
No.
I'm sure the girls were dropping at his feet.
Or they
were
might have been dropping, but
you know. Not in the right way.
No.
So what moment when writing the book did you just lose it laughing?
That's a really good question. I think probably some of the quotes at the beginning of the chapters, because they were obviously funny. And when they're coming out of your own head, it's a little different. But when you're looking at somebody else's point of view, which is where all these quotes came from, a couple of them, every time I read them, I was like, oh, that's great. In fact, first agent I showed the book to said, well, we've got to take all those quotes out of there. He said that after only having read one of the quotes. By the time he got farther into the book, he said, no, we got to leave all those quotes because the quotes at the beginning of the chapters are really great, I think. I can say that without any undue modesty because I didn't write those.
They just had a lot of character.
I think so too. Yeah. And I think they add perspective to the story, which might not be there otherwise.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
I loved all the mentions of the Venus man trap.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. I never heard of that before. I'm like, I'm rocking with this for life now. Whenever I watch Love Island, I'm gonna be like, that's a Venus man trap right there.
It's good. And you said Maria was your favorite character, because I was going to ask you that. Who's your favorite? But you said Maria was.
She was probably my favorite. You know, the character that I also liked, who I didn't expect to like after having experienced the story and then starting to write it, was Orion. The old man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, he kind of stole every scene he was in.
Mm-hmm. And, absolutely.
So I really got to like the character by the end of the story.
Yeah.
In fact, even before that, I started really like him. It was like, what's he going to do now? What's
right.
he going to say now?
You know? Right. And you're writing it. Man.
And I'm writing it. Yeah.
That's, yeah. I love he's just all over the map. So
yeah, he's certainly all over the map.
Yeah, that was great. It was awesome. Daphne wanted to know, what's the elevator pitch if you're trying to get somebody to read this book?
Supernatural thriller with a rich vein of dark humor.
Absolutely. Yep.
I mean,
yep.
That's what we tend to use on that. And sometimes the publisher uses an exciting combination of murder mystery and supernatural thriller or something like that. But because it is both that too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it starts out as a gritty murder mystery and spirals into a supernatural thriller. As David Moody said, how did he say it? He said, wickedly funny, hot, sweaty, magic and murder infused roller coaster.
Yes.
Said, yeah.
Yep.
And, yep. And I thought that was a really great quote. It was very nice of him to give it to me. He's a great writer. Yeah.
I really liked it a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. I know I keep saying that, but I really, really did. And I'm not.
You to keep saying that. I'm gonna, like I say, I may record this and just carry it around with me and show it to people.
But I used to always be a reader, but now we're just so busy with everything that I don't have time to read all that much. Yeah. So if I start reading something that doesn't like grab me right away, then I won't keep reading it. So I was glad that we kept reading it. And then I felt bad because you sent it so long ago and then we just had so much going on and it's like I start it, then I put it down, but I'm like, I really want to get back to this. So that's why I kept touching base with you and saying, I really, really, really do want to read this. And it's just, life is so busy right now and Daphne's doing her thing and I'm trying to, like, if we're going to review it and we're going to talk about it, we want to be reading it at the same time. And so that's why.
Well, I appreciate that you actually read the book before we're talking about it, because a lot of times people don't.
Well, of course not.
Yeah. If they don't have the time sometimes, especially if you're doing TV and radio, and they'll open the book to some page and quote something randomly and ask you about that. And it's like, I don't remember that either.
We wouldn't be able to talk about how funny it is.
No.
Yeah.
If we didn't read it. And that was what stood out to me, is how freaking funny that I would just lay there and I would just literally laugh out loud reading this book. I'm like just laying with my iPad over my face reading. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to drop my iPad now.
Me too. I'm reading at the kitchen table and just laughing and everybody's like, what? And I'm like, oh my God, this and this. And then they laugh because I read them the line and, you know, but then I'm like, okay, back to it.
So. Right. Don't talk to me now.
Yeah. I'm reading this book.
It is very good.
Intellectual and entertaining and very visually written and funny and spooky and cliffhanging, because you really don't see the ending coming until it's right up on you. So
that's good.
I mean, there were a couple hints, obviously,
yeah,
but you weren't for sure where it was going, especially on a couple plot points. But yeah, I thought it was great.
Okay, back to the Hollywood conversation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Who would be your dream cast if we were to make this a movie or a series?
People always ask me that question. I'm not good at it because I see the characters as they are, which makes me hard. It makes it hard for me to put, or as they are to me,
mm-hmm,
makes
right.
it hard for me to put somebody else in their position. But I think Timothy Chalamet, of course, I would be thrilled to get him. I'd be thrilled. Right now, I'd take Danny DeVito. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter. I'd love to see it made into a film. I think there are a number of actors that could do it well. There's one character I think would be particularly well, and I don't remember his name, but he played on, do you remember the old show Friday Night Lights?
Mm-hmm.
He played Landry in the show, and he's become fairly successful since then. I should remember his name, but that's one of the things that's happening with the brain tumors. I don't remember names that well.
Yeah, he could totally be Steve.
Yeah, I think he'd be right at it because he's got that edge of uncertainty, but he's got the humor and the cynicism. I think he could pull it off really well.
Right, and he's not attractive, but he's not hideous.
Yeah, exactly. He's not a pretty boy. I mean, a pretty boy wouldn't work, and it has to be. But by the same token, it couldn't be somebody hideous. Yeah,
right. Yeah, right. You got to go middle of the road there on that.
Yeah, because it's just an average looking guy is what he is.
Yeah, and I think that's hard to translate a book into film or TV too, because you picture a character in your mind, and then they cast somebody, and you're like, man, no.
No, that's not it. You know, like,
yeah,
right. That's when we read The Housemaid, and then the people or the girl who played Millie, it was like, no, this is not who I pictured. Sydney Sweeney was not my idea of reading the book who Millie was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that can be really disconcerting.
Right. Yeah. We would need you in charge of casting.
Yeah. We need you in charge of casting once we.
Okay. Well, then as you're making the movie, once you get the first few million lined up, I will accept that job, being in charge of casting.
Yep. Daphne will write the email this week to Mike Flanagan. Send him a book.
I seriously will.
She will
be like, I'll hound people. I get things done.
Well, I appreciate that. Use all the help I can get on the movie of this.
So anything else interesting, exciting that you want to tell us or what's going on with your other book that you have going on besides the sequel to Steve Witowski?
Well, the Steve Witowski sequel, I'll keep that pretty close to the chest because I'm changing things all the time, as a matter of fact. So I don't want to be locked into stone on anything on that. The other book is, it's a very different. The guy's married. He's had trouble with his wife. It's been a bad marriage. He unfortunately had to institutionalize her and she died. So now he's bringing up his special needs daughter by himself with the help of her mother and goes to the funeral and he comes back and the house has been locked and she's standing in the living room. Only she was just buried. Mm-hmm. And it isn't her standing in the living room. It's basically a hologram standing in the living room. Only there's no projector. And there's no way for anybody to get in. And that's the setup. And it takes off from there.
Okay. That sounds interesting.
We'll be looking for that one.
Yeah. It'll be a while yet. But yeah, we'll be getting that out hopefully fairly soon.
Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye. Or you can let us know when it comes out.
Yeah, okay, I just
need to know Steve's not going to have another identity crisis and change his name again in the next book, right?
No. He's going to have to go by his real name in the next book.
Okay.
Which I didn't even discover until almost the end of the book, and almost the end of the story. So I still think of him as Steve.
Yeah,
right.
The whole time I kept being like, who is this guy? Like, I need to know who this guy is. And you're dropping little breadcrumbs of what happened in the past and why he's in this situation. But then the story just keeps projecting forward with all of this supernatural bitchy woman. and then you go back to like these little breadcrumbs and that's really just like, oh, who is this guy? And it makes you want to flip to the end. But of course, I don't do that because I know the story's building. I know that. But I'm like, I really want to know. Like I said, Daphne and I would talk about it sometimes. I'm like, I want to know who he really is and what really happened. Why is he here in this position with a fake, using someone else's name? Because it wasn't a fake name, but he assumed someone else's name.
Right,
but not necessarily their identity, just their name.
Just the name, basically.
Yeah. So I liked it.
Yeah. I liked all the lines as the real Steve Witowski would quote. It's like, okay, cool. Another breadcrumb.
Yeah. But then it was sad too, you know?
Yeah.
Like we said, it pretty much had everything you need in a book.
Yeah.
It's a good quote. Well, thank you very much. I'll quote you on that one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for us anyway, I'm not much of a romance novelist, but listener, but there was even a little bit of that for those people who like that, or some sort of form of romance, I guess.
Some sort of form of romance. Yeah, would be a way to put it.
Yeah.
Little smutty. I wanted to ask of like all the fiction, either book, movie, TV, horror, genre, villain, demon, creatures that you can think of, who do you think would, without revealing what your demon is, who do you think would rival your demon the best?
Ah, that's a good question. Well, my demon is dysfunctional.
Yeah.
So.
With a capital D.
With a capital D, yeah. So although the demon is powerful, obviously, again, without revealing anything, the demon is searching for more power and to stabilize the situation. And so I think the demon would have trouble with other demons. I think there are many demons that might be more demonic than this demon, but no demon that could do it as badly to the people that this demon encounters as this demon can do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's really talking around the situation there.
Yeah,
so you're not to reveal anything.
But
I think this demon is very powerful within the range of what this demon does, but is extremely dysfunctional in the real world, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe even dysfunctional in the demon world.
Maybe even in the demon world. Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
I think demons
got issues.
Be able to have power. And this demon has to seek out the power.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I found myself getting more sympathetic for the demon as the book went on.
That's good writing. Mm-hmm.
Right. So. It's movement, a change.
Yeah. You have evolution. A lot of that. Evolution. Yep. You have a lot of that in this book. So it makes it a real good page turner and something you definitely want to continue to pick up.
Yeah. Well, I think the characters help evolve each other. They run into each other. They help each other change. And I won't always say grow, but the interaction between them, I think, does a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. Yeah. It's not just, you know, hi, how are you, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of significant interaction between.
A lot.
Yeah.
It has a lot of depth. That's also good.
I'll add that to your quote. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll send you all of them. As I'm editing, I'll be like, oh, yeah, and tell people this. Oh, yeah, and that.
Yeah.
But don't say 52 times. It's great. Or do, whatever.
You can say that to me. Yeah, 52, 53 times. It sounds good every time to me.
Well, we won't keep you. Definitely email us and send us the link for the Substack. And then
keep us posted on the new books absolutely. When they get released, please.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
We'll pick them up. Absolutely. And thank you for your time. Unless you have anything else you want to add.
No, I think that's it. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it, ladies.
All right. We appreciate it, too. We get so nervous. Well, this is only our second interview. So.
Third.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we interviewed a family friend, but her brother was the victim of an attempted murder. So it was a little different because it was closer to home, but we interviewed her.
Yeah. And then we had Rob Rosen on. So that was pretty intimidating. And then you and also
intimidating.
I'm not intimidating.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to talk to brilliant minds sometimes because it's like, oh, well, I don't match your level, but it's okay. Well,
you should be okay with me.
I'm just over here doing
me.
My own thing.
You're doing a crossword. I'm doing a word search. You're playing chess. I'm playing checkers. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And we really, really appreciate your time. And we can't wait to the next Steve Witowski book.
Well,
or I'm not going to reveal his real name, but
I don't even remember it at the moment.
Oh, I do. Oh,
yeah, me too. Fresh though.
Yeah.
Do you have social media? Can you tell our listeners where to find you?
Yeah, they can find me. The easiest place to find me is on my website, which is www.barrymarr.com, which of course everyone can spell. That is BarryMahr.com. Or they can find the book, of course, on Amazon, The Great Dick and the Dysfunctional Demon.
Awesome. Yep.
Daphne already put a link, but we'll re-put the link too.
Yeah, I sent it to a handful of people. They were like, I said, hey, anyone want to join a book club? You know, of course, people are unreliable. So it didn't ever happen. But a bunch of people got the Amazon link. So hopefully they picked it up.
Yeah. And we'll definitely post it. Do you have social media or just the website?
Yeah, no, I'm on everything. Okay. I'm primarily more on X than anything else, unfortunately.
Okay. I was gonna say we don't do that.
Yeah. Well, I'm there from the olden days as a speaker. I had, you know, I don't know, probably 100,000 followers at one point, and I still have 50,000, so I have to keep using it.
Yeah.
I'm a blue sky. I'm building up. So, okay. And on LinkedIn and
Instagram.
I'm starting to do some on Instagram more than I used to, but it's working pretty good for the book. So I'm doing that.
Okay.
So,
we will put your Instagram. Well, we have a blue sky, but it's not really doing very much. And then Daphne's in a fight with Meta, so we're not doing Facebook right now.
Yeah, well, I do Facebook, but blue sky has really got the best potential for me. It seems like you build up followers there very quickly, which is nice. And it's a friendlier place to be than some of the others.
Yeah, no kidding.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, take care. And we really, really appreciate your time.
Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you much, ladies. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.